All right, guys, welcome back to Real Talk with Andres and Heather. It's time for one of our favorite segments.
Am I the Asshole? Real Estate Edition.
Here's how this works, guys. We're going to read out loud a real world style scenario that agents, buyers, and sellers run into all the time.
But just a quick disclaimer, right? Today's stories are fictional, completely fictional. And it's created for educational and discussion, not based on any real clients, any real transactions or agents.
Yeah, the goal isn't here to shame anyone. It's to talk through boundaries, expectations, contracts, and the stuff people don't always explain in real estate.
And by the end, we'll decide, is this really helpful, reasonable reaction, and was someone actually an asshole?
All right, let's get into it. All right, I'm going to read today's scenario, and then we'll break it down and dissect it and discuss it, all right?
Let's do it.
All right. I'm going to pull it up. It's on my phone, so I'm going to read it from my phone. Maybe. Here we go. All right. Am I the asshole? Am I the asshole for firing my buyer after they went behind my back to contact the seller? Before we even dive in, have you ever experienced that? Has someone gone behind your back and contacted the seller?
I had someone that mentioned it to me and say, hey, should we contact the seller? I was like, no. Don't go there. But
let's dive in and see what happened here. I'm a buyer's agent working with a first-time buyer couple. We've been looking for about 3 months. I've shown them over 20 homes and wrote 2 offers that both lost in multiple offer situations. I spent a lot of time explaining contracts, timelines, and strategy. They were very nice, but very emotional and kept saying they didn't want to overpay, even though the market data showed prices were moving up. We finally found a home they love. I pulled comps, showed them why it was priced fairly, and recommended a competitive offer with clean terms. They said they needed to sleep on it. The next morning, I get a call from the listing agent asking if I'm still representing them. It turns out my buyers found the sellers on Facebook, messaged them directly, and told them they love the house. They were working with an agent, but felt pressured. They wanted to keep things simple and save everyone money. The sellers immediately told their agent. When I confronted my buyers, they said they were just asking questions. We didn't think it was a big deal. Agents make too much anyways. We thought maybe we could get a better deal. I explained that contacting the sellers directly violates the spirit and oftentimes the terms of the contract. It puts everyone at risk legally, and it completely undermines my ability to negotiate for them. They apologized, but then asked me to still write the offer and said they expected me to reduce my commission if the deal worked. At that point, I told them I was no longer comfortable representing them, and terminated the buyer agreement per the contract. They're now telling friends I abandoned them and chose money over helping people buy a home. So, am I the asshole for firing my buyer instead of just letting it go?
I don't think so. I think that did the right thing. You know, that's the reason why the contract is in place, to protect their best interest. And obviously they didn't see that. But at the same time, as an agent, you have, you know, you're working to represent them in their best interest. You're working with other agents, with other buyers and sellers, right? You have boundaries that need to be respected. You have a work ethic that you respect, that you want others to respect, and obviously the clients in the situation that didn't respect any of that, right? So I think it was the right decision. Not the agent was not an asshole. On the contrary, I think the buyers were the asshole in that particular scenario, because they're trying to undermine him and what he's capable of doing for them, not realizing that he hurt them in the end, right?
It did. It came back to bite them in the ass. So we're just going to be like, case closed. They're not, he's not the asshole. The buyers are the assholes. No, I'm just kidding. We got to dissect it a little bit for our listeners and explain exactly the situation that happened and why key points of this to make him not the asshole. But to play devil's advocate, did he explain that they couldn't beforehand? Did he explain that correctly, that they don't go directly to the seller? They use him to negotiate on their behalf. Because if that wasn't properly explained, then maybe just automatically firing them like that is a bit much if they didn't know that. Not saying that's what I think. I'm just saying if you don't know, you don't know.
Well, when you're going over the disclosure, right, of what you're doing for them on their behalf, you're mentioning all of these things and why they have to go through you in that particular, for every step of the transaction for their best interest.
Yeah.
So that's part of that process there. So the fact that they were just going around, I think they were just looking for a better deal and it backfired on them.
I do too. It's important that you read that part of the contract to your buyers when you're having them sign your buyer brokerage agreement.
Not only did they get fired by that agent, what if the next agent doesn't give him a commission cut? Now the sellers know what the buyer's interest is. What if they no longer lower, given the same offer?
Mm-hmm.
Now they know they have a stronger case. They may not get the property at the same price, same terms that they were looking to get prior to them reaching out to the seller directly. So,
and they made themselves shady. They made themselves look very shady to the sellers. At the end, they say that they're telling their friends. So I'm assuming in this made up scenario, they know people together. They have joint common friends. They're telling their friends that the agent chose money over helping somebody buy a home, get into a home. What money? They didn't close. He didn't make any money. So all the work that he did showing them 20 homes, I think it was, and writing two offers, negotiating with those agents to try to get under contract, the agent didn't get paid for that. So what money?
I hope he had a retainer fee. Right? That's something that people don't consider, right? You put all this time, all this effort to helping someone, and at the end of the day, they come up with something like this. And it's like, oh, it's unfortunate, but it happens.
It does. It does happen a lot. I don't think a lot of times people who aren't in the industry realize how much work goes into real estate before we even go under contract.
It does. Exactly. There's so much that it gets overlooked that they just think, oh, you'll see a house, write a contract, that's it. You get the keys.
So
we have too many people doing that. If that was
in your opinion, and I know it's, keep in mind this show, there's agents that are listening and people that are listening, all over the country. So it's not particularly for one particular state, and all of the laws are different in real estate in different states. So the questions we'll go over next are kind of, just kind of broad. But when you're talking about boundaries and crossing that line, why does direct contact with the seller, why is it such a big deal, and why shouldn't buyers do that?
It could influence the decision on both parties, right? If you reach out to the seller, just, hey, I really love this property, they might be more leaning into, okay, yeah, I think this is the right family to keep my home, especially, think about it, especially someone that's been living there for 20 years or so, that has been their home for some time. They might want to be careful about who gets the property next, because they still have some emotional attachment to that property, you know, and having that direct contact would really influence that offer.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of the emotional aspect of it that is coming behind me, and the family that's moving over, it could definitely make an impact on the negotiations. It could either break or make it. You know, so I think that's why those boundaries are in place, to help protect both parties from getting emotional in some areas where allow the agents to do their part, negotiate, and find that common ground for both parties, you know, to make the deal happen. And I think that's what's important there.
And it definitely, like you said, it definitely does affect the negotiations, because let's paint this picture. Let's, you know, kind of what happened in the story. Let's say you're my agent, you're representing me. I call the sellers and I'm like, oh my God, I love the home. I have to have your home. I love it so much. Pick me. And then you go to try to negotiate and you're like, no, we're not coming up any more money. This is our final offer. They're going to be like, that's bullshit. They love the house. They want the house. So, you know, you're going to lose all that negotiating power you have, because they already know your mindset. They know that they have you on the hook. You don't want to walk because you're in love with the house.
Yeah. And that's huge. That's huge. If they know all those little aspects, and even, you know, you could say, hey, they might be more lenient to bringing the price down if they know how much we love the property. That's BS, right? Because at the end of the day, the seller's selling the house for a reason. We don't know what that reason is, right? And it could be the net profit on that property. So they're looking to get as much as they can from that sale. Your emotional aspect and attachment to the property as a buyer may not mean anything to them. They're looking to get as much as they can from that house, because they have other responsibilities as well, right? That they need to take care of. We don't understand, you know, the other angle situation when you're representing one side. So coming in and having that direct contact completely could throw everything out for you. So just leave it to the professionals, you know, and allow them to work and find those details that will get the deal make for both parties.
Exactly. And explaining the contract, your buyer brokerage agreement, or your listing agreement, if you're listing the home for them, it's very important that you understand the agent, the contract, so that you can explain it correctly to your client. Because when the client, and then just rushing them, have them sign it, you know, that's not necessarily great, because then you run into situations like this. So yes, you want them to sign the contract, but you also want them to know the contract, and you know the contract, so that as you're going through it and you're explaining these things to them, they know that you know, and then now you know that you explained it to them, so they can't come back and be like, oh, well, I didn't know I wasn't supposed to do that, or I didn't know we couldn't do this. So I think a lot of times agents are in a hurry to just get that lead to turn into a client, and they just want them to sign on the dotted line, that they rush over all of the important stuff. Because let's be honest, most people don't read contracts. They really don't, yep. Even when buying a house.
They don't. And like I said, it's one thing reading it and going through it with them. I also think it's important to explain it to them in their verbiage, right? Like, for instance, I work a lot with Hispanic community. I like them to understand every step of the process in their language, in Spanish, but I also understand, okay, who am I speaking to? What words do they use often? How can I take this, what it says in this country, and simplify it for them to understand it, that they can capture what's in those lines, right? Because you can put a contract in front of them in Spanish, but they may not be familiar with all the words that are there. You know, so they're going to look at it and be like, okay, what does that mean? It's in Spanish, and you may assume that they understand what it says there, but they still may be like, okay, I don't get it. You know, so it's very important to look at the details and understand who your client is and how you can pretty much put that in a verbiage that they are comfortable with, that they understand. That's for me in Spanish, the dialogue changes from one country to the next. Like, no kidding. I could say something in, with my Dominican language, and it means something else for my wife, who she's from Mexico, and her dialect is slightly different. You know, so it's important to recognize those details in the process and ensure that they're understanding based on who they are. Because, like I said, you can put it in Spanish in front of them, but not necessarily mean that they understand what it says there.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, you got to go through that process, but understanding your client and making sure that they get what is in front of them. Very important.
Probably the most important thing. Otherwise, they don't know the process, and you're kind of screwed. What do you think? Lack of explaining the contract, or maybe just even lack of knowledge to begin with, is why a lot of agents let bad behavior from their clients slide instead of, because I hear a lot of times agents complain about like horror stories or nightmare clients, but they kept working with the client. They saw it through, and it was when they could have jumped ship. It was before they were under contract. It was before they were like mid transaction. Why do you think agents continue to work with somebody when they know it's not going to end well?
I think most of all is where the agent's position is at. It's not necessarily the understanding on the contract, but where the agent's position is at. If you're running your business well, if you're running your real estate business quite well, you can say no to any client that you want, right? You don't have to work with anyone that comes on the front door and not, hey, can you help me buy a house? Can you help me sell this house? You know, some clients are not compatible. You're simply not a great match. The way they communicate, the way they behave, for the personalities, whatever the case may not be a great match to work with you. And if you're in a position to say no, you can easily turn those down. I think the problem is some agents may be in need to take over on clients that they normally would not work with, you know? If you have your systems, your boundaries in place, you know, clients will respect that. You know, if you have those boundaries in place and you let them know up front about what those boundaries are, they will respect that. But if you don't have any boundaries, people are going to walk all over you.
True. So I think we're pretty much in agreement in this case. This was a professional end of the relationship, not a reactive reaction to what they did, which I'm not saying it's not 100% reactive. So like, do you think maybe he could have had a talk with them, set expectations again, and been like, I'm going to give you one more chance? Do you think you would have done that in that situation? Or do you think you would have just been like, no, we're done?
From the sound of it, in this scenario, it looked like they were already frustrated with their client. You know, showing over 20 properties, putting multiple offers, and then just not committing to moving forward. I think that was just the tip of the table, right? They're like, okay, I'm done with this. So, no, I don't blame them for that. That was the right decision at their end. Again, sometimes the headache is not worth it.
The last thing you said cut out. What was the last thing you said? It cut out.
Sometimes a headache is not worth it.
Yes, sometimes a headache is not worth it.
I would have done the same thing. So.
Yeah, and it, especially when they were like, you know, they wanted him to write the offer anyways and then cut the commission that he was supposed to make, saying that they'd already said, you know, they agents make too much money. They wanted a deal. And we talk about this all the time, about not knowing all of the work that goes into that transaction. And that's part of explaining it too. A lot of agents, they don't do like weekly updates. They don't let their buyers and seller know what's going on. So if your buyer or seller doesn't hear from you for a couple of days, they just assume that like you're sitting on the couch eating Cheetos. They don't know that you're sorting through properties, calling to find out if they're available, sending them the ones that match. They don't know what you're doing because you're not telling them. So in a way, I can see and understand why the public thinks real estate agents are overpaid and they don't really do anything. But they haven't been behind the desk of a real estate agent trying to do the work that we do and see how hard it is on a daily basis.
Yeah, seriously, it's not just showing houses, right? That's the fun part. I will say that's the fun part. I enjoy looking, walking through the houses, seeing the buyers, you know, face when they walk into a property and they figure out, okay, this is it, this is my property. That makes it for me, right? And then at the end, once they get the keys, just seeing, once they settle in the new property, that's it. But like you said, there's so much more going on behind the scenes to get those ones. Yeah. It means after an overlook, hey, that's part of the show, like I say. You know?
Yeah.
Just gotta keep doing the work and continuously working in their best interest and make that happen for them. So my wife, in fact, asked me yesterday, she's like, do you ever get tired of talking about work? I don't know if there was a hint of something, because I just kept going off. And I said, you know what? I actually enjoy what I'm doing. I love what I'm doing. So every day I have an opportunity to talk to people, to learn something new about the business, about other people. And I'm enjoying myself in doing so.
Like the joke, how do you know a person's a real estate agent? They'll tell you.
You know, and I'm like, no, I don't get tired of it. But if you were to ask me 5 years ago if I get tired of talking about boxes, then yes, I will tell you yes. Because I used to work in the warehouse supply chain, right? So yes, I would get tired of talking about boxes and work. But now you ask me if I get tired of talking about work, it's like, no, I'm always looking for work, actually. Every conversation is an opportunity to learn more about work and get somebody to buy yourself. So no.
You have to love it. If you don't love it, then you're going to be one of the ones that we talked about on Tuesday that leave the business.
Yeah, especially, right? Because here's the thing. It's working with people. It's one of the toughest jobs out there. I would say working with people is the hardest job, because people are hard to please. They're never satisfied. We're never happy. There's always something, right? But in the same capacity, you're always talking to people. You're always learning. You're always adapting. You're always evolving, right? You're always growing. So I think there's a beauty in that you need to learn to appreciate. And once you do, you get to love what you do.
You know, I think I mentioned before, I fired my first ever client when I first became a real estate agent. And that was my first introduction into real estate. Was I was doing for sale by owner calls. I was calling all the for sale by owners, got the appointment, went out, did the tour of the house, got them as a listing. And I'm not gonna go into the whole story on this one, but it turned out because it was my first time, I did keep this person as a client way longer than I should have. He turned out to be extremely racist, extremely sexist. And finally, my coach at the time was like, you need to let him go. This is not worth it. Let him go. And I did. So I did. I did fire him as the client. And that was extremely hard. And it really sucked, especially since it was my very, very first ever anything as a real estate agent. So it sucks. It's not easy. Nobody wants to do it, but it is necessary sometimes. It's absolutely necessary sometimes. Some people just can't work together.
They can't. And to share that story with you, my first client, we talked about it here before. She called me the other day. Which in a similar scenario, just like what we put out there, show her number of properties, went into a contract, nothing planned out, and it was so for XY reason, right? But she called me the other day You know, still stay in touch. I'm one of those that every month or so I follow up, and I haven't reached out to her in 3 weeks or so. She's like, hey, how you been? We just haven't connected. I wanted to see how you guys are doing. But it's one of those, you know, it's a very special person because I learned so much, although we didn't close the transaction. I learned so much in the process from that particular transaction. So I'm really grateful on how that transpired. Because that just really put so many other things into perspective that otherwise, you know, you have to go through them in order to learn them, to figure those things out. So, and to this day, you know, I have a strong relationship with them. At some point, she's going to purchase this year, right? But just going through the whole process, you know, I thought it was a beautiful thing. It was unfortunate, but at the same time, I gained so much from that transaction. And they did as well, you know. So it's now, you know, it's all depending how you take on the situation, right? Because that could be so much worse. We both can look at it as at a different angle with so much grudge and regret that didn't plan out, right? But we both are grateful that, okay, she's not in a bad position, and we learned so much in the process. But there's some situations where that happens and people just take it in such a negative way that it completely, you know, it completely changes things moving forward and how you look at other clients in the future. Mean that doesn't deteriorate who I work with, but rather how to handle those situations and how to better prepare them moving forward, you know. So it was good, but like you, that first client, it was not a pretty situation on the way through, but, you know, different outcomes, different perspectives.
And you have to walk those through sometimes. Like you said, you know, you learn, you grow, you take that into your next transaction, and you try to make sure that situations like this don't happen again. And now you know what to expect. And unfortunately, sometimes we just do have to walk through things. Like somebody can tell you about something, but until you actually walk that path, you really don't know.
Yeah. It's like these scenarios we're playing in, right? You know, we can tell you about it. You can have a good idea how to handle the situations moving forward. But when you're involved in it and you have other things that are relying on you, you might go back and say, hey, I didn't know they said this, but shit, I really need to move forward with this. Because of X, Y, and Z, you know, so it just depends on where you're at in the situation. When the moment comes, make the right decision.
Yep. And it, you know, sometimes it sucks. Like, it sucks to have to fire a client. And then it sucks if you have the same friend group and they're saying their version of what happened. And then you have to combat those rumors and stuff. But unfortunately, that is always going to be a side effect of doing real estate. You're never going to have everybody be 100% happy all the time. That's just not a reality in any scenario.
I see. You're working with people and you're not. It's not going to happen. You know, you can come to an agreement, but is everybody happy? Ready to party? Probably not. So,
nope.
It's fun. You just got to look at the best, you know, best in every situation.
Speaking of situations, are you guys, what is it, the forecast in Alabama looking like for ice apocalypse this weekend?
Oh, yeah. I gotta look at my moving choices in the next year or so, because I thought I was not supposed to get all this ice out here. We're supposed to get 3 to 5 inches of snow, I believe.
Yeah, it's supposed to, I think for here too, we're expecting a lot, so... They've been stocking up, getting prepared, but I'm hoping maybe since, like, sometimes it doesn't happen, it just won't happen, but it probably will.
I thought I left all the snow when I lived in Rhode Island, you know, years ago. I don't want any of that out here. It's too cold for my liking lately, but hey, here I am, you know. So then my wife is happy. She's like, yes, keep doing that, keep snowing. So we can push forward to move to Hawaii at some point.
Well, actually, now that Tony and I went out and spent a shit ton of money to buy all the supplies that we're going to need if we lose power for several days, it probably won't happen. They're like, oh, you're all prepared for it? Okay, well, then it's just not going to be icy today. So that's
probably always the case.
That's but if we didn't buy anything, it would be like shut down for like 2 weeks.
Just imagine, you know, that's always something that, you know, I think about when the power goes out. I grew up like that in DR, where you have power for a number of hours and then it will go out for a number of hours, and so on. And at the time, there was no consistency. Nowadays, they plan it a little better and tell you, hey, from this time to that time, there won't be any power. You know, but it was on and off. You didn't know when there was going to be. Sometimes you had no power all night. So that was normal. Like, I didn't mind. I didn't care. As a kid, I'd just go out in the street and play. We had things to do. Out here, it's like, people don't know what to do. It's like, power goes out. Oh my gosh, what are we going to do? Do we have lights? Do we have? Nobody's prepared to ever for anything.
No. My kids will freak out. They'll be like, there's no Wi-Fi. I'm like, I don't know what to tell you.
So it's just surprise. Every time it happens, I'm like, man, oh man. just give me a couple of books and I'm good.
And knowing that if you look at it from a business standpoint, if you're a real estate agent, you're negotiating stuff, you know going into this weekend that this might be an issue. So plan accordingly. That way you don't lose anything over the weekend because power was out and you couldn't get in touch with a listing agent or you couldn't get in touch with, you know, the buying agent. Just make sure that, I guess, by Saturday morning, any loose ends that you need to be tied up, have tied up.
Yeah, make sure you put it on the other side of the table.
Yeah. Some people might want to extend due diligence. If you're under contract, you might want to extend due diligence and get that signed before this weekend's over.
Right. I just got some documents signed and sent over. So it's fun.
Yep. But it looks like we are at the top of the hour now.
That went by quick, huh?
That did go by quick.
Let's do it.
But all right. So that was today's Am I the Asshole? And what did we decide, Andres?
He was not. I think he was right. He made the right decision.
I think he did. And then, you know, here's the takeaway, that most of these situations don't happen because people are bad. They happen because expectations were not set early on and they were not set clearly.
Well, see, I messed up right here. Clear communication, clear agreements, and understanding, and everyone's role changes everything.
So if you're an agent listening and thinking, I've been in this situation, that's exactly why we're going to do this segment. And we're going to do it, I think, probably like maybe once, twice a month, at least once a month. So that way we can have these scenarios out there.
Absolutely. And if you're a buyer or seller, hopefully this gives you some, you know, some insight into what's really happening behind the scenes.
So we'd love to know what you guys think. Who was the asshole in this one?
Drop your vote in the comments and send this to an agent who needs to hear it. So hey, send it to a buyer and seller too, so not the agent. No.
Send it to everybody. Just share it. Share it all around. And we'll see you guys next week. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow. And if you want to join us on Am I the Asshole Real Estate Edition, scan the QR code and we will see you there. Bye, guys.
All right. See you then.